Morning. It's good to be with you today. Good to see so many visitors with us. We're glad that you're here. A couple of years ago, we had to buy a new dishwasher, and the old one panel broke on it and it burned up, and it had to be replaced. So went and got a new one. It's Frigidaire. I don't recommend them. But if you put the right detergent in them, if you get the Cascade Platinum, they clean pretty good. A few months ago, one of the bars that spins around in the top, under the top rack, fell down into the bottom of the dishwasher, and it melted a little bit on the heating element, and it warped. But, me wanting to save money, I just put it back in place because I figured out how to stamp it back. But what we discovered, or what Jarrell discovered, is that the glasses weren't getting clean because it wasn't rotating. Because it was warped, it was no longer able to rotate. But outside the glasses looked fine. But inside the glasses didn't. This morning, as we were coming here, Jarrell had gotten a glass of water, and there was some ice in it. And she was looking at it in the car, and she said, "There's something in this water." What is it? And she looked to the bottom of the glass, there's a little bit of powder. I said, "Well, don't worry about the powder. Go ahead and drink it all." But it was something that there's some residue in there. And of course that grossed her out. Because either the dishwasher wasn't cleaning or I was trying to kill her. But everybody's kind of been in that situation before. Everybody hates to go to a restaurant and get a glass that's dirty or a plate that's dirty. How does it make you feel about the restaurant? What makes you wonder what else isn't clean? And so when it comes to cleaning things, cleaning the outside and not cleaning the inside is something that's not good. That's probably happened to most of us when you look inside of a glass. You get a glass out of the dishwasher or out of the cabinet. And you see, it looks sparkling on the outside, but there's still some residue, probably because your husband didn't rinse the dishes before he put them in the dishwasher or something like that ever happened. But we know when it comes to these kind of things how important it is to clean the outside and the inside. A cup is not clean if it isn't clean on the inside. It would be really silly to think otherwise. And so this is the same illustration that was read this morning in Matthew chapter 23 that Bob read for us when Jesus is talking to the Pharisees. And he told them that a person is not clean unless they are clean on the inside. The same principle is mentioned in Luke chapter 11. Luke chapter 11 and verse 39. Luke chapter 11, verse 39. The Lord said to him, "Now you Pharisees cleanse the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. You fools, did not he who made the outside make the inside also? But give us alms those things that are within, and behold, everything is clean for you." Again, Jesus' point here is that a person is not clean unless they are clean on the inside. So we want to look at some texts this morning and some principles that we can learn from these texts and talk about what we can do from a practical standpoint to live by these principles that Jesus is giving us. First of all, we want to look at this principle of being an unwashed pot or unwashed glass or cup. And Jesus' instruction to the Pharisees regarding this. In Mark chapter 7, we see that the Pharisees were ritualistic cup washers, or washers in general. Mark chapter 7, verses 3 and 4. And if you notice in the Gospel of Mark explains a lot of these things to an audience that's not necessarily Jewish and doesn't know all the things that they did. So Mark goes into some detail explaining these rituals. Mark chapter 7, verses 3 and 4. "For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands properly, holding to the tradition of the elders. And when they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash." And there are many other traditions they observe, such as the washing of cups and pots and copper vessels and dining couches. And so this is something that a lot of people would like. Those that always want to use the hand sanitizer and you know, sometimes in schools and even at our summer camp, there'd be a person there at the front of the line in the cafeteria sanitizing people's hands because we know the kids didn't do it themselves. So washing hands is a good thing, and more people ought to do it. So the Pharisees were very ritualistic in doing this, and they were afraid of being unclean. And where does this come from? Well, it came from the old law in Leviticus chapter 11 through 15, actually. We won't read the whole thing because there's a lot of things in there, but we'll just look at a short part of it in Leviticus 11, starting verse 29. And these are unclean to you among the swarming things that swarm on the ground: the mole, the rat, the mouse, the great lizard of any kind, the gecko, the monitor lizard, the sand lizard, and the chameleon. These are unclean to you among all that swarm. Whoever touches them when they are dead shall be unclean until the evening. And anything on which of them, on which any of them falls when they are dead shall be unclean, whether it is an article of wood or a garment or skin or sack or any article that is used for any purpose. It must be put into water, and it shall be unclean until evening. Then it shall be clean. And if any of them falls into any earthenware vessel, and all that is in it shall be unclean, and you shall break it. Any food that is in it that could be eaten on which water comes shall be unclean. All the drink that could be drunk from every such vessel shall be unclean. And everything on which any part of their carcass falls shall be unclean. Whether oven or stove, it shall be broken into pieces. They are unclean and shall remain unclean for you. Nevertheless, a spring or a cistern holding water shall be clean, but whoever touches a carcass in them shall be unclean. And if any part of their carcass falls upon any seed that is to be sown, it is clean. But if the water is put onto the seed and any part of their carcass falls on it, it is unclean to you. And I imagine as you listen to that or read that, you're thinking, well, you know, for the period of time in which they live, these are very good rules for them to live out. These are very good sanitary rules that God gave them for their health. And it was something that they needed to do. And so the Pharisees took this instruction and others very, very seriously. They would not want to be defiled by drinking from an earthen vessel. And that would be a vessel that would be pottery, something that would be porous. And so something that's unclean is going to seep into that porous material, and that's why it would be unclean. And so eating off that earthen vessel or eating off an unclean plate, they're not going to do that. And so they wanted everybody to know that they took defilement and they took cleanliness very seriously. There's no way that the Pharisees would drink from a cup or eat off a dish when the inside had not been cleaned. And somebody just taking a quick look at something, they're not going to overlook something. They're going to take very, very rigid steps to clean that. And so they go through this whole process of washing the inside out. And because they wanted to make sure people knew that they were being clean, and they took this very seriously, that they wanted to look righteous. The thing that Jesus is saying to the Pharisees is that they would never in a million years do with their dishes what they did with their own selves. They were very, very good at washing dishes. But they worked on the outside. Not the outside of the dishes, but the outside of themselves. They worked on what others saw. But they left the inside defiled. And Jesus called them whitewashed sepulchres or whitewashed tombs. Something that looks very beautiful on the outside, but on the inside it's corrupt, defiled, and unclean. When I was a sophomore in high school, I went to, not in high school, but in college, I went to Dayton, Ohio for a summer program with a church that that was trying to train young men to preach. I knew the preacher there, and they every summer they would invite somebody from SC to come up there and work with the preacher that summer. And they gave me an apartment. And I just thought I was big stuff because I was out living on my own for 3 months and had this little apartment, little studio apartment, no room for a bed, and it had one of those beds that pulled out of the wall, but it was mine, and I just thought it was great. Well, I was going off to FC camp to be a counselor, and I thought, well, I'm going to save money. I'm going to turn off the power in this apartment while I'm gone, so I'm not going to use any money on power. And what I forgot is that the things that are inside the refrigerator like to stay cold. And so with the power off, I came back and opened up the refrigerator, and there was more in it than what I had left because it was all growing and green. And so, you know, it was disgusting. And so how do I fix that? If I don't get appliance paint and paint the outside, so, oh, well, the refrigerator looks great now. I'm going to wax it. I'm going to clean the outside. And so if anybody looks at my refrigerator, they think it's a great thing. It wouldn't have done any good. On the inside is what needed to be obliterated and needed to be thrown away and cleansed very thoroughly. And that, of course, makes perfect sense. There were these people that Jesus is talking to that appeared righteous to the casual observer. But to God, He knew the heart. In Luke 16, verse 15, He said to them, "You are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your heart. For what is exalted among men is an abomination in the sight of God." So here are those that look good on the outside, but inside, you know, God sees them as being despicable. He sees their greed. He sees their self-indulgence. He sees their hypocrisy. And you know, their law-keeping was not consistent. And this really is contrasted in the Sermon on the Mount, because Jesus makes a lot of references to this kind of attitude. In Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 21, He said, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder,' and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brothers will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says 'You fool' will be liable to hell." And so if you are offering your gift at the altar, and remember your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard, and you be put in prison. Truly I say to you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny." And so what Jesus contrasts here is that there are a lot of people that, oh, well, I'm not going to murder. I wouldn't do that. But He said, well, you'll hate your brother and you'll do all these other things that signify and show that you really have hatred, even though you would not go as far as murdering somebody, because that would be public. Everybody would know that. They would notice that person was missing, and then they'd find out that it was you. But you can hate that person inside and nobody knows. So the Pharisees could hide that from many of the people that saw them, but Jesus said, you can't hide it from God. And it led to a big problem. The big problem is that if they try to clean up the outsides, it's really not very easy to do that because the inside is not right. The greed and the hypocrisy and the hatred that's in their heart, it's there, and it's going to make it very hard to clean up the outside. In Luke chapter 20, in verse 47 or 46, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and love greetings in the marketplaces and the best seats in the synagogue and the places of honor at feast, who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation." So Jesus said, well, they're dressed up really nice. They wear their long robes. They exchange greetings, take the best seats, offer long prayers. But they're hypocrites. You know, there is certainly a lot of things going on in politics would be very easy to use as sermon illustrations. And, you know, just this week, there was a politician that said some things that shouldn't have been said. And then that person comes out and says, well, I shouldn't have said that, because that's very insulting to a lot of people. And it's becoming big news that that was said. And so, I really shouldn't have done that. Okay, well, you know, we're all going to forgive that you said that. You know, what's the problem there? Because that's what is in that person's mind. That what came out of their mouth is what was in their heart. What came out of their mouth is what their true feelings are. And you say something like that, and then you say, well, I shouldn't have said that because the repercussions are really bad. People are not going to like me because I said that. That makes me look really bad on the outside. And I should keep all of those kind of things in my head. Well, the problem is that it's in the head in the first place. And that's what Jesus is saying to the Pharisees. Eventually, your heart is going to be revealed in your actions. And it's very hard to keep your actions right if your heart's not right. And Jesus demonstrated this in Mark chapter 7 and verse 20. Mark chapter 7, verse 20 says, what comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. You notice all of these things are actions. Sexual immorality, that is an action. Theft is an action. That's something that you're doing outwardly. Murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, these are things that are done outwardly. But what Jesus says is what comes out of a person is what defiles him. And so, if they didn't clean the inside, it causes a big problem on the outside. And so when they make these extensive rituals to cleanse both the insides and outsides of their cup and dishes, you know, that's a great thing. You're very thorough in your cleaning of your utensils and your cups. But that's not the way you are. That's not the way you are behaving in your life. So what's the takeaway for us? Let's talk about, you know, Christians and clean cups, and look at some principles. First of all, I want to use it. I struggled to come up with a short little phrase for what I'm going to explain here. You know, sometimes the phrase is used, somebody pulling themselves up by their bootstraps. And the idea is that they are so determined that they're going to help themselves, that they didn't need anybody else's help. They just determined that they were going to be successful. They pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps. That takes too long to say. So I'm going to call it white knuckling. And what I mean by that is, if you're striving really hard, the first thing that comes to my mind is if you're on a roller coaster, like Noah posted on Facebook recently at the Six Flags, and he's white knuckling because he's holding on so tight that his knuckles are turning white. Or if you're pulling a rope, or if you're working very hard, very strenuously, you're trying to pick up something, and you do that with so much force that your knuckles turn white. What I'm saying is that you are trying to the best of your ability with all of your strength to do something. And so when it comes to this idea of cleansing the outside and cleansing the inside, the Pharisees thought if they cleaned the outside, then they would be clean. And it didn't work like that. Matthew chapter 23, verse 25. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and the plate, but inside are full of greed and self-indulgence. What I'm saying by this phrase phrase white-knuckling. People are so intent on making commitments that I'm going to try so hard to change my behavior. And all of their emphasis and all of their strength is put into changing the outside and changing the behavior. And don't get me wrong, I think that a lot of times that we do need to change our behavior, and I don't want anybody to go away from here and think Randy doesn't think that we need to modify our behavior. But listen to what I'm saying. If we are only making commitments about the outside, it's not enough. That's only cleaning the outside of the cup. For example, some people promise themselves, well, I'm not going to take a drink again. I'm determined I'm not going to take a drink. Or I'm determined I'm not going to look at pornography ever again. I'm determined I'm not going to yell at my family. I'm determined I'm not going to lie or gossip. It will be tough, but they're going to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. They're going to white knuckle it. They're going to try as hard as they can. But it's not an outside-in prospect. The inside is not going to be changed by focusing just on the outside. There is no doubt that you need to commit to avoiding all of those things that we just listed. And obviously, if you keep drinking, if you keep looking at things that you shouldn't look at, your heart's going to be full of desire, your heart's going to be full of lust. If you keep yelling at your family, your heart's going to be full of rage. If you keep lying and gossiping, your heart's going to be full of deceit. So stop the behavior, but understand that just stopping outside behavior doesn't fix the inside. They really both go hand in hand. Lasting change comes from within. While it's true that if you keep yelling at your coworkers, yelling at your family, if you try to stop yelling without working on the inside, it can be very difficult. You can white knuckle it for a while, but if it's still that your heart is full of hatred and rage, it's going to be difficult. Matthew chapter 12, verse 34. You brood of vipers, how can you speak good when you are evil? This is contrasting the inside versus the outside. How can you speak good when you are evil? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Many times we hear, especially in this political season, we hear speeches that are made and you think, she doesn't mean that, or he doesn't mean that, because I've seen what they've done in the past. They're pandering. They're saying what people want to hear. And Jesus is on to that. He says, how can you speak good? You're saying the right things, but I know that your heart is full of evil. So spirituality is an inside-out proposition. Jesus told the Pharisees to clean the inside so then the outside can be clean. Matthew chapter 23, verse 26, you blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and the plate, then the outside can also be clean. So make a commitment to clean up your behavior, but make a strong commitment to clean up your heart and your mind and work on what you think. Work on your attitudes. Because character is something that matters more than reputation. There's a difference in character and there's in reputation. And people are very, very concerned about reputation. Reputation is what people see on the outside. What's character? Character is what you really are on the inside. And Jesus said, don't be a whitewashed tomb. Again, Matthew chapter 23, verse 27. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but inwardly are full of dead people's bones and all uncleanliness. So you are so you also outly appear righteous to others, but within you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Don't be a whitewashed tomb. How can people live in such a way that people think that they're righteous? Well, you can go to church. You can fall in line with what everybody else is doing. You can sound a trumpet to portray your spirituality, or perhaps I should say you can tweet about it and Facebook about it. And you can get everybody in the brotherhood thinking that you are the most spiritual person that they know. Just look at what he says. Look at the way he looks. Look at the articles that he's written. Look at the posts that he makes. And he's so spiritual. This morning, Murray sang "Pure in Heart." In the last verse it says, "Keep me from secret sin." Secret sin trips up a lot of people. You have to define who is it secret from. It's not a secret from yourself because you know what you're doing. It's not a secret from God. But the person that is more worried about reputation than they are about character, that's the one that falls prey to secret sin. It's what you are when you are alone what matters most. You may have heard the illustration before with a woman that gets pulled over by the police officer and she wonders what she's done. She wasn't speeding. She didn't run a red light. And he said, "Well, you know, I thought your car was stolen." She said, "Why did you think my car was stolen?" "Because I saw that person cut you off in traffic and I saw what you did and what you said. You know, I could tell what you were saying. And so, and you had a bumper sticker on your car, you know, that talked about, you know, something about God. Bumper stickers all over the car." And so he had said, "What you have on your car here is not consistent with what I saw inside. So I thought that it was stolen." What's the problem there? Well, maybe everybody thinks that she's great because at her job she tells everybody to have a blessed day. Or she's got bumper stickers on her car, so she's doing a lot of outward things. But then somebody cuts her off in traffic. Nobody can see her, she thinks. And so venom, curse words come out of her mouth. Are we different when we are alone, when we think nobody else is watching? Many preachers and religious leaders sometimes have great reputations, but it doesn't protect them from being bombarded by Satan. And many times they fall. And then the true character is known. It's not their reputation, but the true character comes out. So you have to work on who you are on the inside, where it's just you and it's just God. And then the reputation follows in line from that. If your character is right, your reputation is going to be right too. God deserves more than just cleaned up behavior. In Luke chapter 11, verse 40, Jesus said, "You fools, did not he who made the outside make the inside also?" So why did Jesus bring this up, that God made both the outside and the inside? Well, the point is that the way that we live reflects on the one who made us. The way that we live is supposed to give honor and glory to God. But he didn't just create our bodies, he created our hearts as well. So he deserves more honor than just externals. He deserves to be honored from the heart. If God was going to be pleased with just externals, we wouldn't have all this instruction to the Pharisees. Because they were getting a lot of the externals right. They didn't have the internals. God has the authority to mandate our behavior. He has the authority to direct our hearts and minds. He's the one that created our bodies. He created our hearts and minds. He created the inside and the outside. And so, the Pharisees needed to hear this. The great Creator who gave them life and breath and all things deserves more than just lip service and external law keeping. He deserved their heart as well. You know, many times people get tied up on rules and regulations. And no doubt there are rules, there are obligations, there are things that we need to do in our worship to God and in our life. But it's not about, okay, well, I've got a checklist here and I'm going to check all these things off. If we have a relationship with God, we are more than just people who can say the right things in front of the right people. He wants us to have the right heart. Matthew chapter 15, verse 8, "This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me." This is a theme that Jesus repeats over and over. He wants our hearts. He's looking for people that have hearts that are appreciative of God and His love. He looks for people who will devote their hearts to Him. When the heart is there, then the actions follow. In Luke chapter 11, verse 41, it says that God does not want those who will, you know, make a big show about their almsgiving. Luke 11:41, "But give as alms those things that are within, and behold, everything is clean for you." Matthew chapter 6, verse 2, "Thus when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward." And Matthew 23:23 says that they pay tithes of the mint and anise and cumin, and they have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others. So He wants people who give their minds, their hearts, and their souls completely to Him. Another thing that Jesus points out about the Pharisees is that defiled people defile people. That they take others down with them. And so when He describes the Pharisees as tombs, He makes an additional point. You're going through all this, these ritual washings, and you're making sure that nothing is defiled. You're not touching anything defiled or unclean. But what's happened is that you're actually dead. You know, what is dead, if you remember what we read in Leviticus, the things that were dead were considered unclean. You don't want to touch those things. You don't want to touch things that touch the unclean. And He's saying, you're trying not to be unclean, but you are unclean. Because inside you're just dead. In Numbers chapter 19, verse 11, "Because whoever touches the body or the dead body of any person shall be unclean 7 days. He shall cleanse himself with the water on the third day and on the seventh day, and so be clean. But if he does not cleanse himself on the third day and on the seventh day, he will not become clean. Whoever touches a dead person, the body of anyone who has died, and does not cleanse himself, defies the tabernacle of the Lord. And that person shall be cut off from Israel, because the water for impurity was not thrown on him. He shall be unclean, as uncleanness is still on him. This is the law when someone dies in a tent. Everyone who comes into the tent and everyone who is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. And every open vessel that has no cover fastened on it is unclean. Whoever in the open field touches someone who is killed with a sword or who has died naturally touches a human bone or grave shall be unclean 7 days. For the unclean, they shall take some ashes of the burnt sin offering, and fresh water shall be added in a vessel. Then a clean person shall take hyssop and dip in water and sprinkle it on the tent and on all the furnishings and on the persons who were there and on whoever touched the bone or slain or the dead or the grave." So very detailed instructions here about if you touch a dead person or even enter a tent where someone died, you become unclean. But verse 18 specifically notes that anyone who touches a grave is also unclean. And what did Jesus say about the Pharisees? He said they were grave. That they were whitewashed tombs. They're so desperate to be not defiled. And they don't want to be defiled by anyone else. You see what Jesus is? He's calling them something. And those who walked with them, those who followed them, those who touched them, those who imitated them, they were not being cleansed. They were being defiled. In fact, in Matthew chapter 23, verse 13, Jesus said, if you travel across sea and land to make a single proselyte, and when he becomes a proselyte, you make him twice as much a child of hell as yourself. They would go to great lengths to get a convert, to find a Gentile to convert to Judaism and make sure that they followed all the rituals that they needed to do, including being circumcised. But Jesus says when they did that, they became defiled because they were not doing that for the right reason. They were not keeping the law. They were keeping parts of it. And their heart wasn't right. And they were very focused on making those converts keep the external parts of the law. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21, there's a reason that Peter explains that baptism is not about cleansing the flesh. It's very specific. And if you realize that Peter used to be a very devout Jew and was very familiar with the attitudes of the Jews, which tripped him up from time to time, he says, baptism, which corresponds to this, now saves you, not as the removal of dirt from the body. I think most of us realize that when we're baptized, that it's not about getting clean physically. And I hadn't really stopped and thought about this in this kind of detail before, why this is said. But when you relate it to what is going on with the Jews and their emphasis on outward cleansing, this is very, very much targeted to them. It's not about removing dirt. It's not about external things. It's not about people who want to continue in their worldly mindsets while doing some kind of external religious ritual. He says it's not the removal of dirt from the body, but as an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Baptism is for those who want their conscience clean, who want to devote their entire being to God inside and out. It's just not a ritual that you go through and then you go about doing what you always did without change. The whole point of this lesson is that if you focus on externals only, be just like the Pharisees. If you focus on inward, focus on the heart, then the externals naturally follow. If I told my wife, I'm glad that I'm married to you, how much do I need to spend on you on your birthday and on our anniversary, for you to stay with me and for you to feel loved? What do I need to do? Please give me a list of what I need to do to make you feel loved. And she might come up with a list because she might think, this is my best shot. Which she would think that was ridiculous. She would think if you loved me, you would show me in your behavior every day. I wouldn't have to ask you to show me that you love me. I wouldn't have to give you a list of things to do. But you would just do those things because it would come out of your heart. It would come out of that sense of appreciation and love. And the same thing is true spiritually. If we love God, if we love Christ, it's not hard to do what are the external things. Because we're not saying, God, okay, God, give me a list of the external things that I can do so I can have my checklist, I can get my ticket stamped to go to heaven. No, the things that you do, the outward things, come naturally because the inward part is right. The love is there for God. That's what Jesus was telling the Pharisees was missing. The inside is missing, and you're just focused on externals. I hope these things will be useful to you, and that you'll focus on your heart, and you make a commitment to God to serve Him and love Him because of what He's done for us. If we can help you anyway, be obedient to the gospel of Christ. We invite you to come while we stand and sing.